Good day. It's time for Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. I look forward to a lot of things within any given week, but this hour is one for which I'm most giddy. I get to talk with so many cool, interesting people. I'm surrounded by people of the same description, and the only thing wrong with the program for me is it's so dang fun, it just flies by. Well, we'd better fire up the engines and hit the runway, or we won't get it all in. Today, direct within a phone call to Sweden, you'll meet Anders Hall. He's 33.333% of the Nordic Fiddlers block. They're going to visit our neighborhood and play a special concert. We have their story and their music. The Humans of UW Stout is a project, an ongoing assignment for students of Assistant Professor of English Genesee Carter. You're going to learn all the remarkable details. Jim Oliver's here with what's on stage in Western Wisconsin and with news about the classic musical Guys and Dolls opening in Menominee. And to initiate this February edition of Spectrum West, in the background, that's what New York jazz guitarist Cheryl Bailey sounds like when enjoying time in front of a large ensemble. And that's something she'll be doing this Saturday evening with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra. To get to know her better, we talked earlier this week by telephone.
I am a New Yorker, yeah. I live in the Bronx.
Okay. Are you from New York? Were you born and raised there?
My mother was a New Yorker. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania on a farm. But, yeah, I spent all my summers in New York at my grandparents' place. I mean, I've been there almost 25 years, so I consider myself a New Yorker now.
I'm just trying to imagine what a farm kid from Western Pennsylvania does in New York City when she's there in the summer. Well, it's kind of like going to an amusement park, probably, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I loved hanging out with my grandfather.
Going back to the farm, you just stand there and go, man, it's quiet here.
Yeah. I mean, I had a great experience, too, growing up with nature and horses and all that. I don't regret, but I don't miss it either.
Well, hearing about you and reading about you, I did a lot of research, but it was so cool rediscovering the word bop, B-O-P. You know, I love that word. We don't use that word enough, I think. Guess what happens when you Google the word bop?
I don't know.
The first thing you find is the acronym Bureau of Prisons.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay. And then other acronyms that come up are Bird of Paradise, Border Observation Post, Balance of Power, Base of the Pyramid. Here's my favorite, Berwick Olds Pontiac. Because everybody, the interesting thing is no one, I think, realizes that BOP is a word. They keep thinking it's just an acronym and it has to mean three words. But it's actually modern jazz, early modern jazz, that was developed in the 1940s, originally known as bebop. Well, let's go back, because I love the fact that your first guitar was from a JCPenney catalog. That was very cool. Do you remember what kind of stuff you played?
I mean, I was a rocker. I played blues, and I was a real metalhead. I had a band. You know, we would play Black Sabbath. Mm-hmm. I played in bars when I was a teenager, playing Southern rock, and mm-hmm. Hey, I grew up with hillbillies, so, you know, that's how I roll.
Are you on a speakerphone?
I am. Is that distracting? Or?
If you could get a little closer to it, it's sounding a little hollow.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's much better.
Okay.
So now you eventually attended and you now teach at Berkeley. Tell us about that.
I went to Berkeley in the early 80s, whenever that was. But anyway, yeah, I'm a professor there, so I commute from New York to Boston and...
How long of a trip is that?
From my place, about 3.5 hours.
Oh, that's not bad. Well, congratulations on that. We're talking on the phone with Cheryl Bailey. She's a jazz guitarist, very impressive one. She's appearing with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra Saturday at 7:30 p.m. She gained our attention, and now we've done a lot of reading about her. We found, in doing that reading, some of these quotes. One of the most compelling tones of her generation. Another one says, one of the top players in an emerging generation of jazz guitarists, one of jazz guitar's current front runners. Now, that last one seems to say, Cheryl, that your spot at the front isn't always guaranteed forever. You know, it says current front runners. So does that mean that you continue to work at your craft?
And absolutely.
That's a must?
I practice, any instrument, there's a physicality to it. It's an athletic aspect to playing an instrument, and you have to keep that up, without a doubt. And, you know, you want to keep growing, too, not just maintaining, but developing and growing as an artist. So, yeah, it's a big part of my day.
I was going to say, is there a point at which, like a college professor, you can achieve tenure? But that doesn't happen in music, not if you're a real musician. You never get to a point where you're so comfortable that you can say, well, I guess I don't have to work at it anymore.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Once you're labeled as accomplished, that's a nice word to have next to your name, what's the next step? What's the next pursuit?
Well, I mean, I write a lot. I compose a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have several projects that I write for. The one recent one is a duo with the great bassist Harvey S. You might have known him in the past as Harvey Swartz, but mm-hmm. he goes by Harvey S. So we have a duo. Actually, when I leave you guys there, I'm heading out to Bay Area to do a tour, and our group is called Plucky Strum, an acoustic duo. So, you know, I write for that. We're going to be working on a new project. And I have my organ trio, mm-hmm. Which we have several releases out, and I have a quartet. So I guess, you know, I'm just trying to create new works for mm-hmm. all those projects and keep them going and getting out there and making mm-hmm. it happen.
What kind of stuff do you write? Do you write for all different kinds of genres?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I write music that I hear. I don't really think about a genre. I mean, that's sort of my process of writing, is I don't attach any label to it.
Okay.
It is interesting if someone, you know, hires me to write something. Maybe they want a pop song or a folk song. I mean, mm-hmm. that could be an interesting, it's more of a discipline for me. But what the music that I play is just stuff that I hear. And I mean, I think in some ways it's been hard for me in the industry because I do write stuff coming from different places and people don't know how to pigeonhole that. And they just want a very mainstream jazz thing, but I might have a fusion thing or a funk thing or something that's more poppy. That's difficult for them. Not difficult for me because that's what I do, but difficult for them because they never know where are we going to put this.
The Cheryl Bailey Three, is that the organ trio you were talking about?
Yeah, that's the organ trio. Okay. We've been together, about 15 years, and have a pretty regular residency at the 55 Bar in New York, and yeah. we've toured Asia and Canada and stuff in the States. That's always, it's like a family now after
a few years. I've heard from other jazz artists that it's the jazz experience that matters most. Experience at it allows you to have a connection with other players. And that connection is very vital. It's about paying your dues, playing, you know, as often as you can. Because once you have that connection with other players, that's where the improvisation comes. You look at that person, you say, I know where he's going.
I've always wanted to have regular bands. I mean, you know, there are a lot of great players that you could call for a special project, and it can be great, but I think there's something really special when you have a group of people that play together regularly, and you play, you know, I bring in a lot of new music, but there are songs that we've had in the book for a long time, and it's just, it's always great to come back to older things or whatever, but just, yeah, you have that sense of, you know, it's kind of like if you're playing basketball or something, you have a strong team, you know who has your back,
who
you can toss the ball to and who's going to, you know, make things happen. It's just a good feeling.
On your Wisconsin trip, you're, of course, playing with a jazz orchestra that's pretty popular in this part of the world. We know what having a guest artist means to the host ensemble, but tell me what guest appearances do for you as a performer.
You know what I love? I mean, and I love playing the music we're going to play. It's from a recording I did for Manchester Craftsman Guild, A New Promise, which is a tribute to the late, great Emily Remmler. Mm-hmm. I don't get to play some of this material too much because it is orchestrated for big band, but some of the tunes, you know, are tunes that I play in different bands. So it's fun to play with the big band. And also, yeah, when you play with new people, they offer something fresh.
Sure.
And or might play something I hadn't heard before. And I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's exciting for me.
So those experiences are all pieces to the Cheryl Bailey puzzle. In other words, you're on the road after leaving Wisconsin and you say, you know, simply because of the experience you had, like you just said, you just learned something and you can apply that and you become more whole.
Yeah, I mean, somebody can play something and then I bring it back to the folks that I regularly play with and go, you know what, somebody played this. Why don't you try that? Yeah. And that's the great thing about the language of music. You know, you can go anywhere in the world and have this conversation and always be having a new conversation.
Yep, and this week we also have a conversation with a guy from Sweden who's coming to play the fiddle. So there you go. Talk about language of music. Cheryl Bailey, thanks so much for being with us here on Spectrum West. Safe travels, and we all look forward to seeing you play with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra Saturday evening.
Great. I'll see you then.
Cheryl Bailey on guitar, appearing with the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra Saturday night, 7:30. State Theater Eau Claire. Tickets online at chippewavalleyjazz.org or at eauclairearts.com. By phone as well at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, and I'm sure you can also grab them at the door. The Nordic Fiddlers Block. The Humans of UW Stout. Upcoming here on Spectrum West. Thanks for being with us. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting 10 exhibitions per year, and home to masterworks by Monet, O'Keeffe, and Leutze's Washington Crossing the Delaware, mmam.org. Support also comes from Luther College, where nearly 1,000 students, both music and non-music majors, participate in 6 choirs, 3 orchestras, and 2 jazz bands. More information at luther.edu. Spectrum West for a warming February. Nice, isn't it? Won't be long. Well, let's see what's playing at theater company venues in western Wisconsin. Here's Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage the Main Street Kids Club Friday through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike will be performed by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The River Falls Community Theater will perform One Acts and Apps the next 2 Fridays and Saturdays at Junior's Bar and Grill in River Falls. Shrek the Musical Junior will be performed by the Phipps Children's Theater Friday through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Barron Spotlighters will stage the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged through Sunday at the Barron Area Community Center. The White Snake will be staged next Thursday through Saturday by the University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater. Kids on Stage will perform Schoolhouse Rock Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. The St. Croix Festival Theater will perform the comedy Fully Committed Friday through Sunday at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in the old Ben Franklin building on Main Street in St. Croix Falls. And Cumberland ETC has scheduled auditions for Alice in Wonderland from 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday, February 25th, and 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, February 27th, at the ETC Theater in Cumberland.
Thank you, sir. And now Jim turns the spotlight on one production about to realize an exciting opening night. Here again, Jim Oliver.
The musical Guys and Dolls opened in New York in November of 1950 and ran for 1,200 performances and won 5 Tony Awards. Its revivals have won many more Tonys over the years. The Menominee Theater Guild will present its production of this theatrical classic opening Friday, February 26th at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. The director is Melissa Neeland, who joins us in the studio to talk about Guys and Dolls and things theatrical around Menominee and elsewhere. This is your directorial debut with the Theater Guild, so why was Guys and Dolls selected?
That's a great question. People know so many of the songs from the show. It's hilarious. The book itself is hilarious, as well as the lyrics to the songs. The music people love to hear. And we were really excited about presenting a show that many generations of people would be excited to see.
It's been more than 65 years since it opened in New York, so how has it been able to sustain its interest among theatergoers over all these years?
Well, I think that the music itself is so beautiful. So a song like Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat will always be a classic song. The humor is so classic. I think the musical itself actually helped give us our idea of what that time period was. The gangsters and the hotbox girls and the lingo. I mean, the idea of never using any contractions and this very fine way of speaking for these gangsters. I just think that the musical is also enduring because the love stories, both the classic love story of Skye Masterson and Sarah Brown, which is that classic boy meets girl, they don't know if they love each other, they fall in love, they break up, and then they end up back together. Everyone loves to see those love stories, but I would argue that the best love story is actually Nathan Detroit and Adelaide. They are the two we really identify with. They fight, they love each other, and Adelaide says it like it is throughout the entire play, and I love that.
I take it then you haven't made any effort to upgrade the time frame of the play from 60 years ago till today?
That's a great question. It's a difficult thing as a director to really mess with something that's such a classic. The play traditionally is set between about 1945 and 1950. The movie came out in 1955 and was presented as a contemporary kind of musical. And we've only changed it slightly in that our design tends a little bit more towards the mid-century modern aesthetic. So really clean lines. We've taken a lot of the colors from our poster, these fresh yellows and blues and pinks, and incorporated that into the backdrop and into all of the set in order to make it seem a little more sleek. But it really is, if you come and see it, it's the classic musical.
Let's talk just a little bit about the play. It's been around for so long, most people know what it's about.
I guess
you alluded a little bit to it, the two love stories, but talk a little bit about where it goes and what it's all about.
Excellent, yes. I was reading some dramaturgical work from another theater about the play, and I thought they did a great job of summing it up. This play starts off with four basic problems. Skye Masterson comes into town and is challenged to take Miss Sarah to Havana. Miss Sarah works for the Save a Soul mission, and their challenge is getting all of these gangsters into their mission so that it is successful. Nathan Detroit runs a floating crap game in New York, and his problem is that he can't find a place for his floating crap game because, as they say, the heat is on. And so his bet is, of course, with Skye Masterson in order to get the money for that crap game.
Uh-huh.
And then also between Nathan Detroit and his love, Adelaide, they've been engaged for 14 years. And the problem of solving that arrangement.
Uh-huh. She is Melissa Nealon, director of the Menominee Theater Guild production of Guys and Dolls. The Mabel Tainter is a wonderful place to watch performances. What's it like to act there?
It's magical. You feel like you're stepping back in time. And there's also the idea of actors love being in a space that has been used and performed in. It might sound corny, but there is a magic or some kind of energy that gets created. The audience, the performers, all of it. And I think that stays in a space.
Mm-hmm.
And it builds and it makes a place magical to perform in. It's also, of course, just a beautiful, beautiful space. Everyone has worked so hard to maintain its historical accuracy, so we're pretty lucky to have it.
How is it for set building and that sort of thing? What kind of set do you have for Guys and Dolls?
With historic theater sometimes come challenges of mm-hmm. historic spaces. The stage itself is not huge, so creating a set that fills the space and meets the ideas. Many times people come in and now with YouTube and all of these other forms of watching even live musicals, you see these Broadway shows that have massive sets and rotating sets and all of these things. And we don't quite have that ability. But with imagination, I think you can really do quite a bit. We are working hard towards that, again, that aesthetic of mid-century modern. And we have a hand-painted backdrop that really, again, embraces that kind of almost Mad Men feel of Runyon Land or Times Square. And then we have these beautiful signs that are flown in. So clusters of city signs that light up and really give you the idea of the city. We are not using a lot of walls. We don't actually have any real walls that come in and out. It's more the idea of the city. The story is about the people in the city. And so we really try to focus on that.
You tossed in a term there called flown in. Explain what fly space is all about in the theater.
Sure, sure. So when you are watching a performance, many times what's called there's backdrops or large set pieces that you see actually come down from the ceiling. And that in a general kind of theater term would be called you fly that in. It's the fly system that's up there. And so those things are by either pulley systems in some older theaters like the Mabel Tainter, or in newer theaters, it's all technological and many times mechanized. Mm-hmm. But those pieces can come in and out in order to create completely different spaces in one stage.
Who do you have being responsible for doing all that magic with the set and so forth?
Many, many volunteers as part of the Menominee Theater Guild. And I have to say that none of these productions could happen without them. People who come back time and time again because they love the arts and they love supporting the arts and making it happen in our town. So we have people who are trained in. There's a very knowledgeable staff at the Mabel Tainter. And then people get trained in on how to use that equipment. And then we go from there.
You, I have to go back here a little bit. You were mentioned the four main characters in the play. Who are the actors who have those?
Excellent. So the four main characters, we have Skye Masterson, and that is played by Seth Barrier, Sarah Brown, and she is played by Christy Wilson, Miss Adelaide, and she is played by Beth Jean Olson, and of course Nathan Detroit, who is played by Kevin Derzikowski.
You have a BFA in classical theater from the University of Minnesota Guthrie Theater Actor Training Program. And before we started this thing, I very obnoxiously asked you why you weren't in New York waiting on tables, waiting for your big break. But you told me that you managed to stay busy.
I do, definitely, yes. You know, there's so much appeal in a lot of cities, of course, like New York, Chicago, L.A. There's so many wonderful places for actors to go and work. We're fortunate enough, a long time ago, an actor from the Penumbra Theater in the Twin Cities talked to my class. His name is Lester Purry, and he had said, New York isn't no bear. He said that, and he said that it's not the idea of going to New York that it makes you an actor. He said there is so much work being created here in the Twin Cities, challenging work, wonderful work. There are still hundreds of actors, but the pool is a little bit smaller so that you're working more. Mm-hmm. You're continually working on your craft. You never know where life takes you, and I love doing theater. But for right now, I think there's so much talent and ability to create work here. So why go anywhere else?
One of your activities is that you're a teaching artist with Arts Integration Menominee. Tell us what that's about.
In Menominee, we're very fortunate. At the University of Wisconsin-Stout, Dr. Tammy Ray Weiss teaches in the early childhood education program. Actually, she's an art educator. But with the early childhood education program, they've created this AIM, Arts Integration Menominee, program. They won a very large grant. And the whole focus of this program is on the teacher. So many teachers, especially in early childhood education, burn out very early. And so the focus of this grant is really to put the focus on the teacher, give them a teaching artist to be in the classroom with them, to help them integrate their art into the classroom in creative ways, not just for reading or writing, but science, math, anything. And it's been wonderful. They really believe at the heart of education is the teacher, and we're really trying to make sure that these teachers have all of the tools and creative fun tools that they need to not burn out.
Well, let's get back to the play for a minute.
Sure.
Tell us how to get tickets.
Excellent. There's a couple of ways you can get tickets. You can actually go to the Menominee Theater Guild website, and that is MenominieTheaterGuild.com, and you can order tickets there. Mm-hmm. You can also call their box office, and their box office phone number is 715-231 7529.
The show opens Friday, February 26th. How many performances?
We have performances that weekend. It's Friday, 2 on Saturday. Saturday performances are at 2 and 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then 1 on Sunday at 2 o'clock. And it's both weekends. So it's the 26th, 27th, and 28th. And then March 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Uh-huh. Well, we've been talking with Melissa Nealon, director of the Menominee Theater Guild production of Guys and Dolls. Thanks so much for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks both of you from all of us. Coming up, a phone call to Sweden. We're going to be talking with Anders Hall. He's one of three members of the Nordic Fiddlers Block. Kind of an interesting sidelight when he and I were on the telephone. I said, how's your day going? And he said, oh, good. I've been cooking all day. And I asked him what kind of music he likes to listen to, and he said, there's a group called Rose Room, and I've been listening to them while I cook today. And this is a bit of Rose Room in the background at the moment. You can see why he liked it. Spectrum Memo, Saturday, the Chippewa Valley Museum hosts the 7th Fiber Arts Festival from 11 to 4. Watch live-action flax working, fabric dyeing, cordage making, rug hooking, hand spinning, and more. Friday at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls, it's the Fly Dance Company, 7:30 p.m. The website there is cvca.net. This is the weekend of the Home and Garden Show at the Indoor Sports Center in Eau Claire. The Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, the State Theater in Eau Claire, presents Zuzu next Tuesday evening at 7:30. And, of course, Thursday, it's Herman's Hermits, starring Peter Noon. That's at 7:30 as well. Well, sometimes on this giant anthill that is our world, we're so accustomed to doing our jobs, walking and driving from points A to points B, typing on our keyboards, computer big or smartphone small. We're so busy living the day that we don't stop to think about all those other upright living things doing the same. We see them, we make conversation, large and small. We have meetings and do what's called socializing, but we don't pause to consider their footprints, coming and going. Well, in Menominee at UW Stout, they are dwelling on that in a project called Humans of UW Stout, begun in an English classroom where assistant professor Genesee Carter teaches and discovers right along with her students. California, Cal Poly, then New Mexico.
Yes.
Now, I understand UW Stout attracts some pretty good people. So what appealed to you about Stout?
So I received my bachelor's and my master's from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, so one of the first polytechnics. And Stout is a polytechnic. I felt that immediate connection because the motto at Cal Poly was learn by doing. And so I completely understood the polytechnic model.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other reasons was actually because of the search committee interview. And one of the questions that was asked to me on the telephone interview was, is there anything else that you want to tell me, you know, about myself? I had never told any other search committee, and I said, well, I don't like to be pigeonholed. I want lots of different opportunities to get involved in different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire committee started laughing. Stout is the perfect place for you.
Oh, cool.
There's so many ways to get involved. And so, you know, based on that response and the campus visit and knowing what a polytechnic is and wanting to explore the rest of the country, get away from the West Coast, I came here.
See, now that you brought that up, you don't want to be pigeonholed and you want to expand. That's what intrigued me about this whole concept is the fact that the Humans of UW Stout is an English 101 class. And I'm saying to myself, back in the day when I took English, we didn't do anything cool like that. So are projects like this, what, designed to allow people to make more positive associations with English 101? Or has English just changed that much since I went to school?
For me, at least, the assignment is three-pronged. I have a couple of things that I want to do. I certainly want to disarm my students coming into English 101. They have they have a lot of baggage that they bring with them. The red-penned comments written, you know, in the margins of their papers from high school. They have really strong feelings about whether they're good writers or bad writers, or they hate writing or they love writing, or they hate reading and they, you know, or they love reading. And so this is a first assignment of the semester. I want to kind of turn it upside down, what writing is.
Mm-hmm. Is for many of them English compulsory?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But also, academic success, especially retention rates for first-year students, is dependent upon multiple factors.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of belonging, having a sense of belonging to the campus community and feeling like a contributing member of the community, is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I'm committed to is helping students transition from high school to college, helping them understand there are different ways that we can read and write and work with texts, but that they can contribute something to the campus community. It also forces them out of their comfort zone. A lot of students are coming from small Wisconsin and Minnesota towns where everybody knows everybody. Everybody at least looks homogenous, or, you know, somewhat believes the same thing or acts the same way. And I want them to meet other people, move outside of their comfortable communities. And so last semester, two sections of English 101 did this. This semester, this spring semester, I have English 102. And then English 112, which is an honors version, participating, but still first-year students for the most part.
I bet you hear comments from people, or maybe you don't, because I can see this happening. People leave your classroom and their first-year students walking back to their dorm going, that's the difference between high school and college. This is pretty cool.
They're shocked, to be sure. And last semester, I had so many introverts. So we talked about strategies and we watched different YouTube videos and practiced. I sent them out in groups to do it. And they certainly will say, you know, while they're in the process, because I do always check in with them throughout the weeks that they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, oh, I'm learning to talk to people in the elevator.
Yeah.
And I'm not so nervous. A lot of them choose to talk to people in their dorm rooms or on the floor or in the student center, which is totally acceptable. They're professors, right? Or the friends of their roommates. So it's kind of the 6 degrees of separation. But what's really cool is I have students who are telling me, I became friends with the people that I talk to. There was someone, one of the humans, I like to call humans with quotes, humans that was being talked to, chased after one of my students and said, I have something better that I want to tell you to put on the page.
Cool.
Or people are recognizing it and they're saying, oh, you're a part of that page? I follow that page. So they're getting a little bit of notoriety and they're feeling a little special, which is really exciting.
The page you're talking about is a Facebook page. That
is
the Humans of UW stuff.
Yeah. We're not going to get the 17 million followers that Humans of New York has. We have 300 followers and counting, and that's just awesome to me.
That is cool. And I see that you respond to some of the postings, which
is neat. I always try to.
And from that, I learned you like running.
Yep.
But you didn't always.
Right.
I learned that you have trouble sometimes when you're in the water.
Yes. You know, one of the things that was interesting last semester is that I saw students were liking pictures. They were, you know, clicking the like button, but they weren't commenting. And so I asked them, is there this generational gap where I think it's, you know, where I would want to comment so that the stories being shared, the people who go to the page to see their stories, that it's not just likes, but that there's these comments. And my students are like, oh, you know, if you just like the page, that's enough. They don't feel the need necessarily to comment. And so one of the things that I've tried to do is go through and add in comments so that people see that their stories are being read, that we are enjoying, you know, what they're sharing with this community.
Speaking of the word enjoying, we're enjoying a conversation with Genesee Carter. She's an assistant professor at UW Stout in the English department. She has instituted, and it's become popular, a program called the Humans of Stout, fashioned after, once you go to the Humans of New York website, I was going to put that in as a warning, Humans of New York can be addicting. Did the Humans of New York have a stated goal or purpose?
I don't personally know Brandon Stanton, who started Humans of New York.
Okay.
Best of my knowledge, so I could be wrong, is that he quit a job on Wall Street he picked up this photography project and he wanted to collect 10,000 photographs. He really marveled at all the different kinds of humans and the people there. And so he decided to name his project Humans of New York. He originally started out just being an amateur photographer, and the stories actually came later.
Ah, okay.
And so he's interested in interesting pictures, but he's also interested in having conversations with people. Well, not just saying, what are you doing today? Or, you know, what's the best moment of your life, which a lot of my students do. So part of this exercise for me is also to teach them how to start conversations with people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are learning that. Some of them will come back to class and say, I asked them, you know, what's the saddest moment of your life? And that didn't work out so well because I'm strangers with this person. So I had to actually ask them a series of questions to get, you know, to the deep question that I wanted to ask.
Yeah, the irony about all this is that with all of the social media out there, I think there are a number of people, maybe a majority of them, who believe they're pretty good at conversation. But that's not conversation. So it's a project that is making us all, what, better neighbors? We have more perspective on people.
Listening is really important.
Listening,
a friend of
yeah.
mine in California who's also an academic once said to me, since when did talking become more important than listening? And that's something that she said to me many years ago that I adopted and really think is an important foundation of this assignment. Students, well, we all are so quick to comment or to interject. And that's what social media allows us to do, to like something, to dislike something, to retweet it, right?
Mm-hmm.
To pass a judgment. I wanted my students to become listeners without passing judgment, but I also wanted to move them out to experience the diversity of the everyday world.
Yep.
And seeing people like them, I also wanted to move them outside of their comfort zone and say, hey, Stout's a new community. Who are you going to get to know? What stories are you going to listen to? And a lot of my students have come back and said, looking at that person, I never would have guessed he or she would have told me this story. And so, yeah, at the end of the semester, in their reflections, they'll tell me, I've learned not to judge or not to make assumptions about what people look like in their experiences. That doesn't seem like it's this epiphany moment, but it's clear that even 17, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds and even adults older than that still need to learn those basics.
Speaking of basics, the application to English is the fact that they have to write about the experience?
At the end of this several-week assignment, they have to write a reflection, and they have to talk to me about what they hoped people who saw their pictures and their stories learned and what they got out of it. As well, the rest of the semester, I develop writing assignments around Humans of UW Stout.
Okay.
So last semester, students were profiling a couple different stories, and they had to do interviews, and they had to analyze the pictures, and they had to work with those stories, and we're doing similar but different assignments this semester as well. So it's not just a social media project. It's also embedded in writing projects throughout the semester. We've had a coming out story, the struggles therein with parents and talking about it. Also a transgender story. Also stories about students coming from big city urban Chicago. They didn't go to high school with white students, building relationships across racial and ethnic lines. And so, yeah, there's a lot of funny, anecdotal, irreverent stories on there. But there are also some really touching stories that get at deeper issues that students are dealing with on campus.
Sensitivity to what they're learning in a worldly way is something you probably can't escape.
Part of being a college professor is teaching students how to become adults. They're in this new environment, this new situation, and they need that kind of guidance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they can be crazy in the classroom, and that's fine. And that's why I love teaching first-year students, because my goal is to help them understand that with practice and with a positive process, they don't have to hate writing. They can actually become better writers.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to trust me. And so I have to build that relationship with them. What's so important is starting with where students are at and using the knowledge and the experience that they bring with them into the classroom. They know how to use social media. They know how to use Facebook. the challenging part is this storytelling. And so I'm using these skills that they're bringing with them into the classroom, and I'm tweaking it.
Assistant professor and master tweaker, Genesee Carter, UW Stout, with us here on Spectrum West. Thanks for being with us. Interesting stuff.
Oh, it was great being here. Thank you very much.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, offering events during February Heart Awareness Month about maintaining heart health. Details are on the calendar of events webpage at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, now offering guided trips to view wild, bald, and golden eagles. Upcoming eagle viewing field trips are at nationaleaglecenter.org/events. Well, Mark Peterson has convinced more marvelous musicians to cross the Atlantic to perform here in Wisconsin, and the latest occasion features the Nordic Fiddlers Block, consisting of Anders Hall, Olaf Luxengard Mjellema, and Kevin Henderson, a Swede, a Norwegian, and a Shetland Islander, respectively. I called the other day at 10 a.m. It was 5 p.m. in Sweden. Anders Hall was good enough to spend some time, and I had to point out what a wild and crazy bunch Scandinavians can be.
Yeah, we are.
So now you play the fiddle, the viola, and the hardanger fiddle.
But in this context, Olaf is playing the hardanger fiddle. Yes, to the normal fiddle, the reed fiddle, I call it.
Oh, yeah. There's a Hardanger Fiddle Association of America. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's big. I heard about it. I have met some guys that are in it as well.
We've had several viola players on this program over the years. We always have fun when we talk about the viola because the viola is such a misunderstood instrument. It's like forgotten. It doesn't have the reputation that the violin and the cello, and it's right between those two, you know. In an orchestra, it's stuck right between. Did you play the fiddle or the viola first?
I am a fiddle player, and I think I identify myself as a fiddle player, but the viola is such a nice instrument to have, like a counterpoint thing, and especially when you do arrangements with more fiddles, it's nice to have the bottom of the viola. But I heard a lot of those viola jokes.
Well, it's interesting that you say viola and we say viola.
I should say viola.
No, that's fine. I like viola.
Viola.
I think viola sounds prettier.
Yeah.
All right, well, your group is called the Nordic Fiddlers Block. We've all heard the word block used over the years, mostly. On the news, they talk about struggles among countries like the communist block. But if you look up the word block, B-L-O-C, it means a combination of countries, parties, or groups sharing a common purpose. I want to thank you for giving the word block a positive spin, pointing out that a block can be something fun and entertaining. Way to go.
Yeah, we're reclaiming the block name. It is a combination of three countries and the music, and also the similarities that we have in these countries. So we thought when we were finding the name, me and Olaf had decided we want a long name, not a short name, because all the traditional music groups in Sweden are very short, most of them. So we decided we're going to have a long one, and block is a good word.
It's a strong word. It makes you sound like you work out.
Yeah.
Where you live, Anders, there is a rich fiddling tradition. What's the earliest recording of Nordic fiddle music that you remember ever hearing? Was it recorded early?
Yeah, it was recorded quite early. The first recordings were made in Norway, actually, and I think it's just in the beginning, like 1902 or something, first fiddle is on that we can find in the archives of the tunes, but it's a lot of old tunes that are written down and spoken about in the literature much, much earlier in the history as well. Yeah.
This music was handed down among the generations. Do you remember hearing it from generations before you? Did your grandparents listen or play?
Yeah, I'm part of a music family, but my grandparents hasn't played, but it was a lot of like friends and relatives around.
Okay.
That has been playing, and it's a listening tradition, so it's fun to know that I learned this tune from this guy, and he learned it from that guy, and that guy learned it from that guy, and that guy learned it from that girl.
Sure.
150 years ago. We can like trace it back. Yeah. That gives it a little bit more depth, deeper level of the tunes as well.
Mm-hmm. Can you turn on the radio in Sweden or Norway and hear stations playing that stuff?
Unfortunately not. Oh. They have a couple of shows each week, but and some online stuff as well that you can find, but not on the public radio, no.
We're on a phone call to Sweden with Anders Hall, and he is a fiddler in the Nordic Fiddlers Block. They are coming Sunday, February 28th, to the Barron Area Community Center. That's in Barron, Wisconsin. They're going to be playing at 1:30 p.m. We always hear the word traditional when people are talking about native music or indigenous music. How important is it, Anders, for people to appreciate the history of the music they hear and appreciate the tradition, because that's what you guys are continuing?
Yeah, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's just music. And if it's good music, you like it. But when you have the history around it, it gives it a context that is really nice, especially if you like history and so on. You can trace the tunes and all the stories around the fiddlers. You know, it's a lot of characters there. And it gives it a context. But in the end of the day, it's the music is the most, like, the thing that I like about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a characteristic to the music you play? Is it lighthearted? Is it happy music? Is it good dancing music? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, the main reason is dance music. Mm-hmm. It was the old, like in Sweden, we have the polska, we call it, mm-hmm. the type of tune. It was for dancing. So it's no like concert music from the beginning. But then some guys made them into bigger tunes and became more and more skilled, like technically wise and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But in the from the beginning, it's and the base for it is the dance music.
You like to play this kind of music. What kind of music do you like to listen to? I mean, I talked about turning on the radio. What do you listen to other than when you're not playing this stuff?
Today I've been listening to Rose Room. It's a Scottish, like, swing jazz quartet. It's really good. I met a couple of years ago and I found the record and I put it on. I've been cooking food the whole afternoon here and listening to that. And I don't know, I listen a lot on things, different things, like intensely for a period.
Mm-hmm.
I can go on, I hear some classical thing or I hang out with a classical guy and he like, listen to this, listen to that.
Oh, sure.
Then I go into that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listen to, like, the commercial radio pop tunes for a while. And, of course, a lot of traditional fiddle music.
Sure. Have you always played this kind of music, or was there a time when you were a classical musician, like in an orchestra?
Yeah, I tried to play classical for a while, but I didn't learn the reading, the notes. It became difficult after a while, and I was in some orchestra, because then I could lend, like, borrow a viola. To have with me at home. So then I was sitting in the back there, and, like, listening to what the other guy on the side was doing and copying him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I weren't so into it at the time. Regretted that I stopped with it because it is nice music and so on. But at the time, I felt it was so strict. Like, you had to play forte there or, like, piano or crescendo or whatever. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to play it fast here or slow. And no, you shouldn't. No.
You're a rebel.
I was at the time.
Yes. I keep reading about Scandinavian people and how happy they are.
Yeah.
The level of satisfaction with one's life is through the roof in places like Norway and Sweden. And
Denmark, I think. I think I read that list. I think Denmark was the highest one.
They're way out in the middle of nowhere. What do they have to be happy about? No, I'm just kidding.
Depends on what perspective.
The difference. The people have more positive outlooks. Hopefully you never take your scenery for granted because it's so very beautiful.
Yeah. I don't know, like, if I play some traditional tunes for you, very often in minor, but it's still happy tunes. In minor and quite dark, a lot of people say.
Minor keys are meant to make you sad, supposedly.
Yeah, like melancholic. I think it depends on who you meet, you know? I met a lot of happy Americans as well.
Well, I'm one of those guys, I think.
Yeah.
What you're saying is you have a way of making minor chords and minor keys seem happy.
Yeah, and like beautiful more.
Sure.
But you use the beauty of it. I don't know. You have to come to the concert and hear it.
I figure if you guys are good enough to travel as far as you did, I can travel.
You can make it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being with us here on Spectrum West. We look forward to seeing you in Barron.
Yeah, and thank you for having us. See you up in Wisconsin soon.
Called the Nordic Fiddler's Block. You deserve to be entertained like this. Next Sunday, February 28th, the beautiful Barron Area Community Center, 1:30 p.m. The website is thebacc.com. Tickets will also be sold at the door. Spectrum Memo at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory. Saturday, there's an audience sing-along featuring popular hymns accompanied by the Northern Lakes Chamber Orchestra. That's at 7:30. Saturday evening at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, it's the Baby Boomer Comedy Stand-Up Show. Website's mabeltainter.org. The phone there is 235-0001. Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson offers a ballroom dance party Saturday, the first and third Saturday of each month through May as well. There's a stand-up comedy class with Scott Novotny Mondays, February 22nd, 29th, and Wednesdays, February 24th and March 2nd. Yoga classes. Got to try that one of these days. I keep saying I'm going to do yoga. Yeah, one of these days. And they have exhibitions by regional artists in their galleries. Thephipps.org is their website. Next week, oh yeah, Howard Guitar Lidke has a new CD to share and talk about. We'll finally get to our look at the popularity of curling and more. Three cheers for the promotional assistance of JJW, DB, and DK. They make this all easy and A-OK, and without them would be just OMG. TTFN, I'll meet you right back here next week on Spectrum West. See you.